It's great to be with you guys tonight, and I really appreciate Stephen's choices of songs, especially that first one. It was amazing being in a place that we knew that Christ walked a few thousand years ago, and being in those same places. Okay, a few weeks ago, well, about a month ago now, Jonathan and I took part in a three-week tour of Israel, and especially digging at the Lachish site. We would normally say Lachish, but over there is Lachish. You can tell a local that I went to Lachish, they have no idea what you're talking about. This is kind of a background about Israel right now. Right now, this is what Israel is. The borders, all that. Population of, from 2012, is 7.9 million. Now, this is a very small area. I didn't actually understand how small it was until we got over there. In comparison to Florida, it doesn't even take up half the state. It's a very small place, but there's a lot of people. It's probably something like India, where all of it's very compact. Buildings are high, but the living space is very small. Oops, that's not supposed to do that. Okay. This is the old city of Jerusalem, located basically in the heart of modern Jerusalem. It's surrounded on all sides by modern buildings. And if you compare it to a site that we know, this is Biglerville. It's the same size. It's when they talk about, you know, going up to Jerusalem, all that, yeah, we think of something magnificent. It's small. It's tiny. And then when we start looking at the city of David, located on the southeastern edge of the old city of Jerusalem. This was a city that David built. He fortified the walls, built them up, made his palace there. This is the Gateway movie theater complex and hotels out here, 15 and 30. It's maybe a third of a mile long, about, somewhere in there. So that was one thing going over there. Here we look at our Bible maps and go, wow, this place is big, you know. Saul was chasing David all across the country. He was going maybe 20 miles at the most at a time, and then stopping, and then going another 20 miles. Also, this is the Sea of Galilee. This is another thing, is when we hear of Jesus preaching on the Sea of Galilee, they go, oh, and he went to the other side, and the multitudes followed him around. I always thought, wow, you know, they followed him around a sea. That's kind of cool. You need the devotion of that. That's Washington, D.C. So it is significant, depending on what part you're in. But when you look across and you can see the other side of the sea, and it's like, this is really a tight area. All right. These are the highlights of the places that we visited. Tonight, I'm going to be talking about Jerusalem and a little bit of the dig at Lachish. And Jonathan will be talking more about the history of the Lachish site. These are the highlights of the places we saw. This is not all of them. If we were talking about all of them, it would probably take us 3 weeks. We had a great time over there. All right. Quickly, this is the part of the schedule for our dig. We were waking up 4:30 in the morning over there, which is about 9:30 at night here the day before. So while you guys were prepping to go to bed, we were just beginning our day, waking up and loading up on the bus. Leave the hostel. We would get to the dig. We would dig for about 2 hours. We'd have a break for coffee. Dig another 2 hours. Breakfast. Dig another 2 hours. Then we'd have watermelon break, which, oh, best break of the day. It was great. Hot. Every day the temperature was around 80 degrees. The hottest we ever experienced was down at the Dead Sea. It was 110. But watermelon break in the middle of the day, great. Dig for about an hour and a half, pack up, leave the dig, go back to our hostel. Hostel provided lunch, eat lunch, go rest, shower up, which showers were a really big thing. We were always covered in dirt. Then have pottery washing. All the pottery that we dug up during the day had to be washed, and we were searching for writing. Over there, if you find writing, it's huge. They actually will give you a free week of living at the dig if you find an inscription of some sort. Doesn't matter what it is, as long as it's writing. I think we only found one, maybe two inscriptions the 2 weeks we were there, but none from our group. And then every evening, around 6 p.m., we would have a lecture. One of the professors or a guest would come in, and they would just speak about various topics. We have dinner at 7 as soon as the lecture was done, and we'd go to bed. You did not want to stay up late. We did it, I think, once or twice, then we all regretted it the next morning. Now we're going to go into Jerusalem itself and look at some of the sites. This is a highlight. I can't cover everything. This is just going to be some of the big things, biblical sites in Jerusalem. Okay, this is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. This is the place that is thought to be Golgotha, the place of the skull where Jesus was crucified. Local legend puts it here. The geographic of the area puts it here. So it's good likelihood. The problem is that back in the, I'm trying to think who was doing it, near the Crusader time, they came through and went, oh, here's a biblical site. Let's build a church. Destroying the site pretty much, but you got a nice church. So everywhere we are seeing these really beautiful churches. This one is split up between the Jews, the Greek Orthodox, and the Armenians. So they each have their own little sectors, and they do not cross over with the other people. They don't go intermingling at all. I don't know if you guys can see it. Right here is a ladder. That ladder has been there for at least, I think, John, was it 200 years? 150. It has been there because no one knows who owns it, so they can't touch it. The only people that can move it are people doing restoration on the building. And one of them, for fun, decide, oh, I'm going to move it to the other side of the building, see what happens. It took them a while to actually figure out, hey, the ladder's not there anymore. So they had to bring it back, but still, no one can move the thing. So until the wood breaks down, it's going to be there. Okay, this is inside. As I said, these are beautiful churches, really great architecture. Israelis love really big stairs. I don't know why. They're short. Most of them are about 5 feet tall. But if you notice, these stairs are about as tall as Catherine, but each stair is about that big. So when you're walking up, it's kind of trouble to get up there, especially when I'm carrying all my camera supplies, backpack, and all that. And they don't really have arm rails at all, or handrails. This is a tomb inside the church, kind of a traditional tomb. We didn't get a chance to go inside it because the line was humongous. The other side of this room is actually filled with people. But it was really cool architecture. This was tombs built into the site. The black around it means it was burnt at some time, the building burnt in there. If you guys know David McClister, he's a teacher down at FC, he actually crawled in one of these, and we got some photos. Mine didn't turn out as I would like. Okay, and actually under the site is a quarry. Instead of going and taking the stones from elsewhere, they just dug underneath themselves, got the stones, built the church up. And you can go down and visit this. It's really amazing, some of the rocks they pulled out. This is the rock that is supposed to be Golgotha, the actual rock where Jesus was crucified on top of it. As I said, I don't know if this is the exact one. It could be, but something similar to this. Now moving on, let's turn to John 5, verse 2, if you have your Bibles with you. Okay. Now this is a story of Jesus healing the lame man. And it says in verse 2, now there is in Jerusalem, by the sheep gate, a pool, which is called in Hebrew Bethesda, having five porches. In there lay a great multitude of sick people, blind, lame, paralyzed, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain time into the pool, stirred up the water. Whoever stepped in first after the stirring of the water was made well, whatever disease he had. This site was actually highly disputed as whether it existed. They couldn't find it. They said, okay, here's where it should be. It's not here. And all of a sudden, they started digging down and went, hey, we got a pool. It has five sides. Which, five sides, if you think about it, it's really weird for a pool to have. You think of a pool, has four sides. This one has five. This is not fully excavated yet. They're still working on it. But it had been built upon so many times, had become a landfill, and then they had built buildings on top of that, that they had lost the site, which is very, very common over there. Is there's so many biblical sites, but they get reused, recycled. You take a stone from this place, put it into this building, and you're looking at a building, well, there's a stone from Herod, but there's nothing under it. So why is there a stone from Herod over here? Bethsaida was a really interesting place because it is, you're sitting in a place that goes, Jesus was here. You know, he performed a miracle here. That's just awesome. Some other Jerusalem photos. This is an Islamic cemetery. Islamic and Jewish people, as you know, don't get along at all. This is backing up above is going to be the Garden of Gethsemane, which I'll show here in a bit. Islamic people built this here because they believed the Messiah was going to come through from the garden. So they said, here, we're going to put a cemetery here, we're going to block his entrance into Jerusalem. Jews said, whatever. He's going to be flying, we don't care. They go back and forth, they try to, you know, undermine the other one, and then it's a constant war between them, literally a war at times. So this is just kind of some interesting things. The Jews are getting ready for the return. They're still getting ready. This is a gold lampstand that is the biblical dimensions. Everything's correct according to the Bible as to what the pieces of the temple are supposed to be like. They're slowly building them, and they have them throughout the city. So when the Messiah comes back and rebuilds the temple, they have all the pieces ready to go. It might be a little bit waiting, but oh well. Western Wall, otherwise known as the Wailing Wall. You can't get any photos down in like right next to it. They have a thing against photos. Not sure why. We went here every Friday evening because it's the start of Sabbath, and it's when they begin their worship. It was very interesting. They all come here to worship, but they all worship differently. You have the Russian Orthodox with really big fuzzy hats, really cool looking. And then you have different groups throughout. Split down the middle is basically like a wall, men on one side, women on another. They worship separately. Everything from sitting and quietly reading and praying to having a speaker speak to getting up and dancing around shouting. Saw it all. Here we go. This is actually a dig site happening under the plaza there. They know it is a biblical site, and they know they can dig down and find the remains of walls below what they can see now. So they're digging under, so that entire place right here where I showed is hollow underneath. They're slowly digging up to the wall, and they're finding more and more stuff, pulling it all out as they can. Okay, so we're going to the dig itself. Great picture of Jonathan. He found some pottery that he accidentally broke, but we were able to put it back together. No, that happened all the time. I found a piece of pottery about this big with a pickaxe. Somehow I managed to get under it, and I flipped it up, and we were all kind of like, okay, we're going to go slowly now. If you think about archaeology, little brushes, small tools. No. We're using pickaxes and shovels. We would dig down. We went, I think my squared went about 5 feet down in 2 weeks, which we had to navigate around walls that were there and really big stones. I had to pull all the stones out that we could. This is the sunrise every morning we saw at Lachish. It was a beautiful sight. We were looking eastern the way our site was. We had, I believe there's three or four different sites going at the time. Our area was B group, and we were searching for the gate because they knew that there probably was a second gate to the city. They didn't know where, so they said, this might be a good place. There was a well down below us, down a hill. Said, okay, the gate might be here. So we were digging, never found the gate, but we think we know where it was. And where it is, we can't get to because it is a pathway built by the Park Authority. The Park Authority won't let us dig it up. This is a site, second day. Can't really tell much. It's just dirt. Basically, we were filling buckets, throwing the dirt into a pile, filling more buckets, 8 hours a day filling buckets. This is the end of first week. As you can see, we've gone down pretty far. It's still pretty much level. The lighting on this is bad because of the shades we had up. Now, if you see the sand, the white, those are sandbags. That's called the bulk in between each square. And you're able to actually see the layers of dirt going down. We found destruction layers, and you could tell that because it was all burnt. It was all black, soot everywhere, and that was a destruction layer. So you knew, okay, we're going to find broken pottery here. We're going to find maybe broken walls, different things like that as it fills up over time. Okay, this is probably mid of second week. Okay, now we've gotten rocks in here. We have something. We thought we had the continuance of a wall that was in the square next to us. So the director, Yossi, was always, okay, find my wall, where's my wall? And we were like, we just got a bunch of rocks, we don't know what it means yet, so we continued digging. This is yen by the time we left. The box is about 15 feet by 15, it's a 5 by 5 meter area. If you notice here, we have a wall here, coming down here, and then we have a wall coming out here. So we figured, okay, we have a rooms of some sort. We know we have a room in here that goes into the next area over. We have something in this L shape here. We didn't know what it was. We find some pottery, but not a ton. And then right in here, we started finding store jars. We found some full of seeds that had been burnt. Now this is really, really important because we can send those for carbon dating. We get the date of that area within about 40 years of when it was destroyed, which is humongous. It was one of the biggest finds that we got in our area. Actually, it was the biggest for our square. But we figured, okay, we got a storage room right here. Where's the rest of it? And we looked, and it was inside the bulk, right in here. And we couldn't dig because it's under a walkway again, and we can't dig up that walkway. Slightly annoying, but we're like, okay, we know that if we ever come back here, that's where we're going to dig next. We're going to find all that storage area. This is the pot full of burnt seeds after we had emptied it out. It's quite large. It was probably about this wide, about that deep. Big piece of pottery. Okay, these are three of the kind of main prominent people at Lachish. This is Tal. He was supervisor next to me. He had been digging for a few years. This is Yossi, the director of the site. Now over here we call professors, you know, Professor Garfinkel was his last name. Over there, it's Yossi. First name basis, everyone's on first names. Just different culture, different way of doing it. And the third, this is Hadass. She was mine and actually Catherine's supervisor. We were in the same square. She was pursuing a bachelor degree at Hebrew University and was our supervisor. Hilarious to talk to. Her English at times was a bit fuzzy, so we had some fun with that at times. Okay, this is the part of the wall on it. It's not a really great picture showing up there. It's better on my computer. And here's our group. We went, I believe by the end, what was it, 13? Okay, yeah, about 13 of us near the end, I think. Yeah, 13 there. We added 5 more by the end of the trip. Of people just joining in. Many of you guys noticed Luke here. He came up last spring break with a bunch of people from Florida. He's a teacher at Florida College. He was our leader of our group. So we were Luke's group. This is my square. Luke, Hadass, Catherine, and I, we dug that square about 5 feet deep, 5 meter by 5 meter. A lot of work, but it was a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed it. Okay, I'm going to really pick up pace here. Mount of Olives, looking towards the Dome of the Rock and the Temple Mount. Temple Mount was, I think, around 30 acres. Very impressive. This area here, the City of David, right off the Temple Mount. As I said, it's probably about a third of a mile long. Saw the camels, did all that. Mount of Olives, the place where Jesus prayed before he was killed. This is the gate. Beautiful. It's now been blocked up, but it's about probably a mile, and there's a valley there. And so I realize as I'm standing in the garden that as Jesus was praying, he would have looked up probably and seen the men coming a half mile out with torches coming to arrest him. Kind of a sobering thought there. As I said, churches everywhere. This one had a reindeer on top of it for some reason up there. We don't know why it has reindeer. Then we went to the Israeli Museum. This is an altar. When they talk about in the Bible, you have altar with the horns, pouring the blood on the horns. I never understood what that meant until I saw this in the museum. And this is a typical altar for burning offerings. This is a scale model of the Herodian Jerusalem. This is the temple here. This used to be in a hotel somewhere in Israel. It got moved to the Israeli Museum. And as you can see the size of this, you got people here and then the scale of it. Most of it is accurate. Some of the things are not sure exactly where all the sites were, but as close as they can guess. City of David. David's palace was, I believe, one of these two buildings here. For that time, humongous. Now we look at it and go, okay, yeah, it was kind of cool. But then they were building with hand tools, moving rocks, a couple tons with hand tools and very basic technology. Temple Mount, most of our group forgot the warning of don't wear shorts at the Temple Mount. It's an Islamic site, it's a holy site, they won't allow you to wear shorts. So all the guys got to buy a souvenir to cover their legs. Catherine has one. Apparently her sleeves were not long enough, even though they're about as length as mine. They wanted it over her elbow, so she got one too. More sites of the Temple Mount. This is just a great big meeting place. So when they talk about Christians meeting at the temple, there's plenty of room to do that. They had a couple dozen groups, different places, all meeting. We got there as the first day of Ramadan, which is Islamic holiday. All the Islams were up there. Some Jews tried to go up there. Islamic people were not happy at all. Hezekiah's tunnel. This is in I don't have time to read this, but in 2 Kings 20:20, it talks about Hezekiah building a tunnel. He blocked up the water and built a tunnel to a pool. This is the tunnel. I'm sorry, this is taken with the cell phone. I didn't have room to get a camera out. It's about 533 meters long, or about 0.3 miles. Very slight downgrade, continuous water flow, still water in it today. You can walk the entire length. We did. It was a blast. Probably one of the best things in Jerusalem we did. At times, it's a bit tight, so if you're claustrophobic, I was crossing my arms, getting my shoulders through at times, and also you're ducking. You could tell who was digging at that time, if they're tall or short, because the ceiling height changed. All of a sudden, it would be high over your head, you had no problem. The next, you're walking like this. And you go through for a little bit, and then you yell back, hey, high ceiling ahead. And then you stand up, everyone comes up, come to another place, low ceiling. Everyone ducks down. No lights in it, had to carry your own flashlights. The water in there at the highest point was probably about this high across my legs. So it wasn't terrible. Had a backpack on that didn't get wet or anything, which I was very glad. This is a point, I don't know if you guys can read this. It says, you are standing at the place where Shalom inscription written approximately 2,700 years ago during the reign of King Hezekiah was discovered. Basically a plaque saying, I, King Hezekiah, built this tunnel. Here's the reason. Great archaeology find, because instead of guessing, oh, who built this? It's, I did. It's wonderful. Every time you find one, they're excited. Okay, I'm done for my part. If you have any questions, come up and ask me. I'll be more than glad to talk with you. I can talk for hours about this. John's is going to take over and talk more about the Lachish site that we are digging at and the history of that site there. Thanks for the attention, Jonathan. It's all yours.
Good evening. While I'm getting wired up, first I'd like to thank all of you guys for coming out and being interested in hearing about this, and I'd like to thank my parents and grandparents for making this even possible. So as Samuel said, I'm going to be talking about the history of Lachish, and specifically how does it relate to the Bible story. All right, so Lachish in the Bible, it'd been around before most of the Bible stories that we read about. First time that it involves the Hebrews is during the invasion. Joshua conquered Lachish. But before that, and I did bring my Bible up, if you would, turn to Joshua chapter 10, and we'll be starting in the third verse. Joshua 10, we'll be reading 3 through 11. Therefore, Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent to Horam, king of Hebron, Piram, king of Jarmuth, Japhiah, king of Lachish, Debir, king of Eglon, saying, "Come up to me and help me that we may attack Gibeon, for it has made peace with Joshua and with the children of Israel." Therefore, the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon gathered together and went up, and all their armies encamped before Gibeon and made war against it. And the men of Gibeon sent to Joshua at the camp at Gilgal, saying, "Do not forsake your servants. Come up to us quickly. Save us and help us, for the kings of the Amorites who dwell in the mountains have gathered together against us." So Joshua ascended from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him, and all the mighty men of valor. And the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not fear them, for I have delivered them into your hand. Not a man of them shall stand before you." Joshua therefore came upon them suddenly, having marched all night from Gilgal. So the Lord routed them before Israel, killed them with great slaughter at Gibeon, chased them along the road that goes to Beth Horon, and struck them down as far as Azekah and Makkedah. And it happened as they fled before Israel and were on the descent of Beth Horon, the Lord cast down large hailstones from heaven on them as far as Azekah, and they died. There are more who died from the hailstones than children of Israel killed with the sword. Here we see what at first seems like a tactical mistake. The children of Israel don't have siege equipment. A huge city for its day like Lachish would have been almost impossible to conquer. Well, the king made a mistake. He fought them in the field. You don't need siege equipment when you're fighting in a field. So the army was destroyed. The children of Israel get to Lachish and they take it in 2 days. Why? Easy. You have old men, women, and young children. That's all that's left in the city. And one of the things Samuel didn't mention, our mission where we were digging was to find out more about Iron Age Lachish. Iron Age being about the time of the United Kingdom, so about 1000 to 1250-ish. We failed. We didn't find out anything about Iron Age Lachish, and here's why. One little figurine, it's only about that big, and it was found about 10 feet away from where I was working. This figurine, you can't really tell. I'll show a different figurine that shows better what this position is. It's called a smiting god. Lots of different gods would be portrayed in this position. You think of Greek and Roman mythology. Zeus was often portrayed with a lightning bolt in his hand, or Ares with his sword, or Poseidon with his trident. This is a Bronze Age figurine. Bronze Age being before Iron Age. We missed it, because Iron Age stuff should be on top of the Bronze Age, and we had just dug down through that. There was nothing there. We were just digging out dirt. So now they're trying to figure out, what does that mean? Which doesn't mean there wasn't a city there. It just means it was a different place on the tell, and we found out that later at another section of the site. So this god, what is he doing? You see, these two little pegs here, this would be a foot, this would be a foot, little pegs underneath, it would have been set into like a little wooden stand, so he'd be standing up. This is one arm, here's his head, a little bit of a hat or crown or something, and another arm. This very well could be a predecessor of the god Baal, who we know from specifically in the Divided Kingdom. And likely, it was knocked off of its stand. Likely guess as to who knocked it off would have been some Israeli, or not Israeli, they weren't Israelis at the time, a Hebrew coming through after they took the city and knocking the god down, because of course it's a false god. So this was kind of interesting to think, last time somebody saw this. Either it could have been the owner's last day on earth, or it could have been a Hebrew destroying a false god, which was quite an interesting feeling. This is a similar figurine from a different time period, but it shows the pose, and it's much better kept. This is in the Israeli Museum. And you find these figurines. They're from all different sites, different countries. You can find them from Egypt to Mesopotamia to Europe. It's very, very common. Most of the time, they copied each other's gods. They just gave them different names. Okay, so how about the divided kingdom? That's really the next time we hear about Lachish. It really isn't big during the United Kingdom. Saul doesn't do anything with it. It was there during the time of David. It doesn't play a big role, though. During the divided kingdom, it gets pretty big. Ahaziah flees to Lachish. They send to it, to the city, and say, kill him. They kill him, send back word, that's all good. But then, the next time we see it is during the reign of Hezekiah. Hezekiah is a fascinating king that we don't know all that much about. We know a lot about David and Solomon. Hezekiah did some really cool things, and he was, for the most part, a follower of God. So turn to 2 Kings chapter 18. And we're going to read what is one of the most amusing stories in the Old Testament. It doesn't sound amusing at first, though. 2 Kings chapter 18. And starting in verse 13. In the 14th year of King Hezekiah, Sennacherib, king of Assyria, came up against all the fortified cities of Jerusalem, of Judah, and took them. Then Hezekiah, king of Judah, sent to the king of Assyria at Lachish, saying, I have done wrong. Turn away from me. Whatever you impose on me, I will pay. And the king of Assyria assessed Hezekiah, king of Judah, 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. So Hezekiah gave him all the silver that was found in the house of the Lord and in the treasuries of the king's house. At that time, Hezekiah stripped the gold from the doors of the temple of the Lord and from the pillars which Hezekiah, king of Judah, had overlaid and gave it to the king of Assyria. This is a very dark day in the history of Judah. Syria has fallen. Israel has fallen. Assyria looks like it's unstoppable. They get down, they take Lachish. But before they took Lachish, they took another city that we really don't know much about from biblical texts called Azekah. This is called one of the Lachish letters. In the main gate of Lachish, there was an excavation in the 30s, and they found dozens of these letters. And like Samuel said, they're written on pottery. If we had found this one, we probably could have stayed the whole season for free because of its significance. This is letter number 4. And it's a letter written to Lachish saying, pretty much, how are you guys doing? We can no longer see the signal fires of Azekah. Why could they not see a signal fire? Azekah had fallen, and Lachish was next. Lachish didn't know it yet, but they would be the last and greatest victory that the Assyrian king would have on this campaign. These are the Lachish panels. Currently, they reside in the British Museum, because the British, pretty much when it comes to archaeology, they got all the good stuff, took it back to London. So if you want to see the good archaeology, don't go to Israel, go to London. These panels tell the story of the capture of Lachish. And it's fascinating. It's almost like Egyptian hieroglyphics because it tells everything. You can see here are Assyrian archers and more archers. This would be the city wall, the gate. These are people going into captivity carrying a few belongings. These would have been city leaders probably being impaled as an example to others. We defeated you. Don't mess with us again. The Assyrians were known, and they even bragged about their brutality. This is the best part. That's a siege ramp. Why do you need a siege ramp? Well, the walls of Lachish were very high, especially for their time. So in order to get your siege equipment up to the walls, specifically up to the top, you've got to build a ramp. climbing up the sides of Lachish, you could do it, but it wouldn't go very well if you're doing it with armor. And when the people on top of the city are shooting arrows, these would have been torches, sling stones, other things like that, just trying to stop you. It would have been pretty easy for them to stop you. The siege ramp here is interesting, because it's still there. We pulled up to Lachish, and right away, because I'd taken a class on archaeology, I saw it, and I went, Luke, that slope. He went, yeah, it's what you think it is. I was like, siege ramp, right? He went, yeah. The siege ramp is here. Now it's used as a goat path for the shepherds. They feed their sheep on top of the tell, not where we're digging, hopefully. And they use it to walk up and down. But that was really interesting because they excavated it and they found all manner of military equipment, armor, weapons, sling stones, arrowheads, almost without number. It must have been quite a battle. And here is a better picture. I like this one better because it shows just how magnificent this was. Lachish wasn't the last battle on this campaign, though. Jerusalem was. Why would King Sennacherib, when he goes back to Assyria, spend and commission these panels who, if we had them up here, there wouldn't be room up here for them. There's so many of them. Why would he commission this for not even taking the capital city? Well, as we know from reading later, he writes that he caught Hezekiah in Jerusalem like a bird in a cage. Now, if you've ever studied propaganda, what did he not say? He caught Hezekiah in Jerusalem, yes. Besieged Jerusalem, yes. Made life in Jerusalem very terrible, yes. He never took it. Why not? Well, he had a problem, and that is that an angel paid a visit at night and destroyed, I believe, 165,000 men. Completely destroyed his army. Which leads to a problem for Sennacherib. I can't go home and say that. You know, that's not very good for morale. The newsreels don't like it when I say things like that. So he didn't. He just talked about what he had done. Which we find that to be really interesting because you have the biblical account, and then when you have this that describes the story, they match and they click perfectly, which was one of the most interesting things. Archaeology will never prove the Bible. It'll prove that some people exist. You can't prove it, though. But when you have the evidence of the Bible that we've all read multiple times, probably been told to us since we were growing up before we could read, and then when there's things found like this that prove those stories, that's why we do this. That's why we go to a sunburnt country in the middle of nowhere where people hate each other and we dig. Because that is a feeling like no other. For sake of time, we're going to go ahead and end there. There are other places, like Samuel said, if you have questions about them, feel free to ask. We love to talk about it. I don't know about him, but I'm counting down to some time when I can get back. It'd be today if I could. But I want to bring you back to this. Because for an invitation, I was thinking, you know, how can we... Lachish, there really isn't any spiritual connotations to go along with it. This is one of the most interesting things, though. That golden menorah, or lampstand. It's solid gold. Lots of time, expense, research was poured into this thing. And there's a sign on the bulletproof glass, which is exceptionally thick for obvious reasons, that says, to be preserved until the temple is rebuilt. May it be rebuilt quickly and in our days. And I stood there and I thought, you know, they're waiting. It's looking over the Temple Mount where there's a mosque. They're waiting for that to be torn down. They're waiting for the temple to be rebuilt. Why? Well, they're waiting for the Messiah. Waiting for the Messiah to come to lead his people to victory. We wait. But instead of waiting for the Messiah to come on this hill, they missed it when in his glory he died on a hill that way. Very, very close. And yet they haven't realized it, and they never will. So tonight I encourage you, as a way of invitation, to think the Messiah has already come. But he will come again. Will you be ready? You don't have to wait for a temple to be built like the Israelis are waiting now. We don't need a temple. We can go to our God anytime. And hopefully we do. If you're not ready to be a Christian, I ask you why. But if you are, don't wait any longer. Please come forward as we stand and sing.